Peace. Today is Monday, April 15th. I have a letter written for Basan, circulated to my constituency entitled The Case for a Global Strike. Forgive me in any errors I make reading or in the background noise. The power is out and I wanted to be sure this circulated today. I write to you from the floor of my bedroom in Sierra Leone. 2 days ago, Iran launched a successful set of counterattacks against apartheid regimes occupying the land of Palestine, currently known as the government, so-called state of Israel, which bombed Iranian embassies in an open attack of war on April 1st. I can hear construction workers breaking rocks outside my window, and the children of the house playing and running, and the noise of Freetown traffic in an endless rise and fall. I always find it pertinent to name the moment clearly, as I am always certain tomorrow will not look like today. The things I consider commonplace will be precious and long gone. Some of my mind firmly plants itself in yesterday already. Gone are the days where I can see children running and playing in the street, anywhere in the world, and I do not think of Palestinian children massacred in front of each other. I am an impermanent after. I kneel to pray and recall accounts of young Sudanese women messaging their local religious leaders, asking them if they would still be permitted into paradise if they commit suicide to avoid rape from occupying soldiers. I am in a permanent after. Today is April 15th, 2024, and tomorrow will not look like today. Basan Aouda, a filmmaker, journalist, and storyteller, has called the world to strike on several occasions on behalf of her liberated homeland, Palestine. I feel about Basan and Hind and Multaz and many others, like I feel about my cousins. I pray for them before bed, asking for their continued protection, wondering for them. The same way I prayed for my family as a child during Sierra Leone's own neo-colonial war of attrition, or when Ebola came like an angel of death. This is the way I pray for Basan and for Palestine, with this heart beating inside me that is both theirs and mine. She's my age. Basan, you're my age. I wish we could have met at university or in an artist's workshop. I feel like we would have a long conversation. I understand more now about what my Auntie Dekwi means when she says sisters in struggle. That's how she speaks of indigenous women, about Palestinian women, about women across the colonized world that use every tool at their disposal to resist. Sisters in the struggle. It's never felt like an understatement. I feel it in my body now. Sisters, now. Someone who you care most ardently for. Someone who you care so much for that it compels you to action. I'm certain that many of you feel this for me, this long-distance, cross-cultural, transcontinental kinship. Rita, a stranger-turned-friend via Instagram DMs, had me over for tea on a long layover in Morocco, and we spent at least 2 hours talking about blooming revolution and healing through art. She's a musician, and she helps pave the way for musicians in Morocco who fight for their royalties as well as their right to exist. She's brilliant. Sisters in struggle. Your lens on the world changes mine, and I am grateful for it. Today, we are among war. I mobilize and I organize and I pray for a day where we might sit down for tea. I write to you, Basan, with the attention of my own constituency to shine light on your calls for a general strike, one of which occurs today, April 15th, 2024. These urgent asks have been met with lots of skepticism across the Western world. How do we organize something so fast? Does it really matter if I participate? How does one strike solve anything? I write to throw my pen and my circumstance behind you. I lend you all, my constituency, my lenses as a teacher, in hopes that I make plain to you why these questions of feasibility assume there is another way out of our current standing oppressions. We have no other option for worldwide liberation that does not include a mass refusal to produce capital. We occupy a crucial moment of pivot as a species. Victory for the masses feels impossible from the complete waste they lay on anyone who descends to their power. This feeling is manufactured. The hopelessness is manufactured. We see the insecurity of nation-state everywhere. Never before has surveillance from the state been so totalitarian. Even/especially through the device you likely read or listen to this on, I also submit, a conglomeration of ruling bodies who monitor their citizens with paranoia do so because they are very aware of their own precarity. The nation-state, as it currently exists, knows it will fall. Never before have we had this much access to one another in organizing across the world for our good. They know, and we are beginning to find out. This iteration of the human sovereign world, which is capitalism ruled by white Western supremacy, is dying. It's on the way out. Something else is on the way in. The question is what? Will the world that comes after this one be for us or against us? I hope this set of arguments helps us to understand our place in the human narrative as those that still have the power to stop the machine. Theses. There are four, and I list them. One, the genocide in Palestine is not unique nor novel except in the fact that we can see it in real time. This is what colonial war has always looked like. Ruthie Wilson Gilmore described the machine perfectly. Racism, specifically, is the state-sanctioned or extra-legal production and exploitation of group-differentiated vulnerability to premature death. That is Ruth Wilson Gilmore from Golden Gulag, Prison Surplus, Crisis, and Opposition to Globalizing California. Ruthie Wilson Gilmore is an abolitionist that has radicalized me immensely. So to put that above quote in my own terms, racism occurs, racism is made when a group of people, Black, indigenous, colonized peoples in this world, are constantly exposed to the conditions of premature death in overt ways such as carpet bombing or slavery, or in more covert ways like pollution and policy that denies healthcare, poverty wages, restricting access to food. This mass killing comes with either a green light from the state, like Biden arriving in Tel Aviv, backing Israel's bogus narratives on the hospital strikes in Gaza back in October of 2023. Or it can come from civilian populaces of that same oppressive state, like when Israeli settlers attack Palestinian villages in occupied West Bank, burning homes, killing at least one. That's a headline from today, from Democracy Now! Capitalism in and of itself created the need for racial oppression. The establishment of capitalism required the open and expedited slaughter of indigenous peoples to secure their own land, and the slow-bred, constant slaughter of African peoples as a vehicle to over-harvest lands across North, South America, as well as Europe, and then continue to expand. So then, shortly put, racial capitalism is a death machine. There is no way we can transition this world to a new order, where the masses are sovereign over our own lives, without withholding the labor that keeps the death machine going. Striking is not just in a decline of consumption, which is when we refuse to consume the products that are made by the machine. Radical action occurs when we decline production. That is the only way to stop the machine in their tracks. If we do not, the machine will continue slaughter for output. Simply put, you can't just stop buying. We do actually have to stop working. Nothing about the actions taking place in the Palestinian genocide are new. This is racial capitalism doing what it's always done, slaughtered the indigenous population, embedded heinous acts of violence to crush dissent, exacted a nation state on those shallow graves, and found or imported a labor force to exploit such that they can strip the land of her resources. It has always been this horrifying. The only difference now is that we can see the horror live, televised, and in real time. So point two, thesis two. We are tasked with mobilization from our new understandings. We have a sister war now occurring in Sudan, where the superpower benefiting from violent civilian death is the United Arab Emirates, who extract the gold from Sudan in deals with warring military groups while the people are slaughtered. That is a war of attrition, designed to break the will of the people bit by bit by bit, massacre by massacre, until they force consent to military rule. We have had wars of similar depravity in the killings of Iraqis, in this made-up war on terror by the United States, in the killings of Black radical counterinsurgents in the United States' second civil war in the 1960s, in the attempted decimation of Vietnam, again by the U.S. There might be a pattern here, but this is what I mean about wars of colonialism. This is what annexing Hawaii looked like, the ball of Burkina Faso's revolutionary government, and this is just to name a few. It's happened again and again, and it will keep happening until we pivot away from allowing the technology of the nation state to be sovereign over the earth. This is what the nation state does under capitalism. There's a sub-thesis here, entitled Extrapolate in all caps. The 15th of April also marks the one-year war in Sudan. 1 year the war in Sudan has been going on, which has largely been ignored by Western spectacle. I say all the time your attention is lucrative, and this particularly here is really at my constituency, right? This is never clearer than watching the world, UN trials, emergency meetings, world mobilization on behalf of Palestine, and no such thing for Sudan. I know that Palestinians do not feel good about this. We should not have to be in a state where we have to compete for attention in order to get justice. We should not require spectacle to mobilize for our countrymen. There are no journalist influencers living in Sudan who have risen out as superstars with moment-to-moment updates, and the technological infrastructure and political landscape simply do not align for that. Is that why we don't care? I'm also hyper aware, as a Black American and as a Sierra Leonean, of how no one blinks when Black people die. We were the original capital under racial capitalism. We were the capital. There is still this sentiment, especially among the Western world, that suffering and dying is just what we do. We humans are very good at caring for what we can manage to see. I am both heartened and excited by seeing increased conversations, direct actions, fundraisers for Palestine. The responsibility to the human family is to be consistently in the work of expanding your eyesight, which means you care for the people too that you might not see every day in your algorithm. The human tapestry, woven together in different colors and patterns, is ultimately one long interconnected thread. The first step of mobilization that must come from realizing our situation under racial capitalism is fighting for everyone that suffers from it, not just the people we can see. If we fight situationally, we are set up to lose because we save one part of the human tapestry while another part burns. Coordinated action can only come from coordinated understanding. No one is free until everyone is free. So here's thesis three: fast, train, study, fight. I have here a quote from Mumia Abu-Jamal in 2003. Only in a slavocracy would the idea of freedom fighting and resistance seem mad. That's from Prison Radio in Black August. Fast, train, study, fight is the slogan of Black August, a month of discipline where those active in the fight for liberation remember our political prisoners and dedicate ourselves to the sharpening of our minds, our bodies, and our communities in service of liberation. Black August was first commemorated with collective action in 1971 when George Jackson was assassinated by San Quentin prison guards in an attempt to quell the revolutionary spirit he stewarded within the concentration camp of prison enslavement. The article above, linked in the newsletter, is by Mama Ayana Mashamba, an educator, healer, poet, and founding member of the Oakland chapter of the Malcolm X grassroots movements from the Bay. Black August also acknowledges the amount of life and world-changing victories of resistance that have occurred for Black peoples, Black oppressed peoples in August, everything from the Haitian Revolution to Nat Turner's Rebellion to the birth of Fred Hampton. I find these four actions to be key to mobilization in the practical, rather than just the rhetorical or theoretical, especially if you're newly radicalized like me. I've only been radicalized for 6 years. So what are the practical ways to strike while fasting, training, studying, and fighting? Fasting from consumption, right? That's the one we know about. Do not engage in mindless consumption. Don't buy anything from the companies who use your dollars to oppress yourself and your neighbors. Yes, this includes groceries and gas and flights and fast food, much more than that. Do not grease the machine with your dollars. I understand these things are embedded in our day-to-day society. Resist anyways. They're going to make it not easy, but that is not an excuse for not doing it. Additionally, fasting during the inaugural Black August, including abstinence from radio and television. Last year, my first time fasting for Black August, I fasted from screens. Conscious divestment from the machine includes mind and body, not just dollars. Training in mind and body. Train your attention. Train yourself to notice when you impulse spend. Money is a token you can trade for power. To be in the role of consumer is to constantly trade your chance for power for a momentary comfort, a good feeling, a rush, a high, a status symbol, all of which depreciate for you and all of which give your tokens of power to the world makers currently in charge. Now is the time to build up the muscles of dissent, both the literal and the metaphysical strength and will to act in favor of the people when it is time to. Study. You are only as useful as to the movement as you are able to use yourself well. Study yourself and your own wants and your needs and your habits. Know intimately your own boundaries, motivations, and desires. What is your version of freedom? What are you specifically fighting for? Write it down. Study your own observable world. Ensure that you are caught up well on the events that surround you. This means local. When you walk around outside, what do you see? First of all, do you take walks? I would recommend them. Who are your neighbors? What do they do? What do they want? Who are your comrades and who are not? What is going on in your local policy? Study the world around you that you also cannot personally observe, right? And not just the news that comes through your algorithm. You need to learn where the stitches of the human tapestry are frayed. Note where they are being or have been burned intentionally. How do you connect to those charred places? What does regeneration and recreation look like? The backdrop of Sudan's war saw about 8 months of sporadic striking that finally led to the general strike, which then led to the successful popular uprising. Sudan had a successful popular uprising in 2019 because they engaged in strikes and strikes and strikes until they collected enough mass movement. It will never feel like the right time. We create the time that we need to mobilize on our best behalf. Fight. Fight the impulse to do nothing. You are in a natural state of doing nothing by design. So actually better, I should say, you are kept in default, in a state of believing that you should do nothing. Do not do nothing. The more you do something, the easier it is to do the next thing. Fight the will to accept the world as something that happens above you. You have more power than you think you do. Fight the urge to act alone. Fight the urge to shrink from consequence. Fight the restrictions that inevitably follow dissent. And also, literally engaging in combat training is helpful, but for legal purposes, I don't condone violence. 4, and this is the final one. Revolution is more about beginnings than endings. Critical mass happens with repeat action. Critical mass happens with repeat action. The tide will not change because of some mass quantum leap everyone has in logic and in circumstance. It will not come because your neighbor saw you pick up your pitchfork and said, "Oh yes, right, we did schedule a revolution today. Let me grab my chainsaw." The masses will shift because person after person after person continues to practice small and increasing modes of dissent, such that when the powder kegs go off, when moments like this occur, or like Black Lives Matter worldwide uprisings of 2020, moments which really break through the numb dissonance that we all wade through every day, we have enough discipline to engage in organized action. General striking needs to not be just for Palestine, but for all the pressing problems that have a time mark on them. If Palestine is what gets you to mobilize, I commend you, because Palestine is what got me to mobilize for general strikes. It was because of my sister Basan who called for them, and I thank her. Thank you. We as human species need to recognize that what is happening in Palestine will happen again if we do not have a coalesced list of needs and demands. We need to understand the need to shape policy. We strike for sovereignty under the hands of the masses. Sovereignty under the hands of the masses. I learned so much from studying the successes and failures of the Burkina Faso Revolution, lasting for 4 glorious years. Here's what's previously happened across colonized countries that managed to have revolution like clockwork, right? Step 3, mobilization, was executed by a critical mass of people. And not everyone, maybe not even the majority, but enough people fasted and trained and studied and fought. Enough people taught their neighbor, girlfriend, cousin, librarian, grocery store clerk the same thing of the ways that we can engage with struggle rather than run from it or assume it's the job of someone else. There was enough mobilization sustained by extrapolation, the understanding that this was bigger than them and their circumstance, that a popular uprising occurred when the majority moved, which is a hard thing not to lose. A popular uprising is a difficult thing to lose. The strength in numbers is very real. Look at the farmer strike in India. How could they have failed? They didn't. Then, this new and fragile union with a new world, this baby that needs attention, protecting a family of support around it, it gets hijacked. Step 3 occurs well, and then step 4 happens, and we get hijacked. Colonial, where neo-colonial regimes take root and begin killing as many people as they can in attempts to spread epigenetic fear into the populace such that they never, ever try and imagine a world without their power again. This is what's currently happening in Sudan right now. This is what's happening in Palestine. This is what's happening everywhere where there are colonized people that are fighting against oppressive regimes. If we can manage to act together, if we can manage worldwide mobilization and worldwide solidarity, we can stand for one another at this crucial stage. We must dream past the start of something and be thinking towards the day when we are inevitably successful. How will we keep those gains? Past the fall of the empire, what are we fighting for? And how do we intend to keep it? Peace to you and yours, Basan. The sun has set in Sierra Leone. There's not a day that goes by where I don't think of you. And I thank you for being plugged in, being supportive of, being for the revolutions across the world, especially your own. Thank you for being someone who belongs to your country in ways that are bold and in ways that endanger you. I am so proud of you. I can't thank you enough. And peace to everyone reading. Peace here meaning, I hope the work that you engage with today emboldens you to act tomorrow. Isma Tuji. Here is a very important postscript. This is a strike that still lives largely on social media. And we need that to change. Talk to your neighbors, your parents, people you know in your physical daily life. I did not learn about this strike until people in my physical life told me about it. Use this text, circulate it, talk about it. Please, all right, thank you. Have a good day.